Listen, guys, this is fourth grade shit. Seriously embarrassing to read. If this board wants to stomp Kim, this is hardly advanced discussion. You guys look like a bunch of girls sitting around in kindergarten art class eating paste, which is symbolic as hell, and throwing clay at each other. Grow the fuck up, bitches! Holy fuck all!
Another one!
Alright, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler, the more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
Well, Dougals and I have been chatting this morning already for about 30 minutes or so, and we said, hey, you know, we should probably hit record one of these minutes, so we went ahead and hit record, and we're going to kick things off because we were talking about John Grubb, who's now the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks, and you talk about, like, a strange journey. You know, about 10 years ago, the guy sleeping in his sister's carport or double wide or whatever it was, or maybe 15 years ago or whatever. And now he's offensive coordinator for an NFL team. And he and his wife don't have to leave Seattle after all and can stay in the home. And what are you thinking there? I think it's going to be very interesting to watch that offense.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually happy for Grubb. I appreciated his comments to Husky Nation. You know, he's kind of sitting out there outside of the office of the stadium in the background. Throughout the whole journey, you know, after the Sugar Bowl, he kind of had like a nice touching, hey, we're getting back to work. And then afterwards, he kind of also just, you could tell he had interviewed for the job and didn't get it. And you could tell he really wanted it. And so I always just kind of respected that he wanted to stay. He really wanted to be a Husky, and at least, you know, it sounds like his family is enjoying Seattle. And so he gave us a hell of a season. I've called for his head multiple times throughout the year. the way he likes to close out games and make things, you take the good with the bad though. It's, you know, the absolute idiocy in some of those moments is also why, you know, a lot of his big plays are open and how he runs his offense. So, right. You know, I'm excited for him. I think he still has a lot to prove. I was always in the camp that if Grubb left, it's still DeBoer's offense. So if I'm a Bama fan, yeah, I'm not necessarily thinking that the world is over. But what it does do is it forces DeBoer to take on more responsibility one way or the other, whether it's less trust in the new play caller or calling plays himself because he can't find that person that can take over. It kind of shakes his boat a little bit where he has to stresses him. And I enjoy that because, you know, he's kind of screwed us all over. And so I think it's great for the Seahawks, especially if you have someone who can throw it downfield, Seattle, you know, they have weapons. I'm excited for the Seahawks, and I'm happy for Grubb, and I'm glad that Bama's going to have just another curveball thrown their way.
Yeah, I am too. And I mean, and believe you me, I would love nothing more than to see, you know, DeBoer go 4-8 or whatever. But these people on some of these folks on Hardcore Husky on the boards there, you know, calling, you know, saying that DeBoer is going to get fired after 2 years or they're going to go 6-6. And, you know, no, you know, he was able to maximize the talents of everybody on the roster in amazing ways. And there might have also been a little voodoo good luck going on there as well to some of those Houdini escapes that we made to go 14-1. Mm-hmm. You know, all you have to do is look at his track record and the past his prologue, and he's going to do fine. I think a worst case scenario is that he goes 10-3 and there'll be like one bad loss, and then there might be people getting upset or whatever, but he's going to do fine down there, you know? So now the fact that he has to go get a new coordinator and, you know, I hope he picks somebody terrible and they do bad. And I would love for him to go 6-6 and get fired, believe me, but I don't think it's going to happen. So.
Well, I think more than anything, what's happened this offseason, and just it's we've seen this coming for a while with college football and NIL and transfer portal. And it's been this sort of, you know, slow moving train wreck, just watching it from afar. But it's sort of it's finally impacted, because I mean, you have the head coach of UCLA going to Ohio State to be an OC. Nobody wants to coach college football anymore, because the turnover is just so incredible. I mean, it sounds exhausting. These guys are already multimillionaires, and you're at the top of the top. Why would you? Why would you want to stick around when you have to recruit every single roster out there, plus your own roster? Nobody even cares about the high school kids. Signing day was a dud. It just seems way, way too chaotic. That's why Saban got out. I believe he just saw, like, this is unsustainable. And with DeBoer, he might be in trouble, but not because he's a bad coach. Just I don't know if he has the ability to handle. There's just so much negative venom going from every single direction, especially in the SEC. It doesn't get any more intense than that. I don't know if right. he's built to handle that kind of turnover year after year after year after year. His success at Sioux Falls was based on, you know, a culture that they developed. UW, and I kind of mentioned this a while back, how it's one of the things I loved about this 23 team is it's one of the last true old school college football teams to some extent, where you had original pieces that stuck it out through thick and thin. You had a culture developed. Yeah, there were the transfer guys like Penix that came in that helped, but even Penix played a lot of football for UW. I mean, we used to only see quarterbacks play for 2 years back in the day when they were upperclassmen. So it feels like from Adunze to you know, even Kalepa when he left, and a lot of the OL, a lot of the defensive, a lot of the guys that were there were core guys that were Peterson guys that stuck it out through the Lake era. DeBoer came in, he had an incredible foundation, and they persevered. I mean, it was a magical old school season where you felt like they cared about Washington. Now it's like, well, why did everyone leave? And each other, right? And why did everyone leave? You know, after the way that season broke down at the end, I don't even blame a lot of these players. I know I might get heat for that. Everyone's like, you know, fuck the kids. Yeah. They're not a dog. They're dead to me once they leave Washington, all that. But, you know, the way that season, how emotional that season was. I mean, we were hanging on by a thread for weeks and weeks at a time. And to go through all the stuff that they went through and to finally almost get there, I think the Sugar Bowl win is just one of the best wins in Husky history. They accomplished so much, and then it's just like to have it all feels like kind of like the end of it almost would feel empty going back into that locker room, seeing it stripped. Exactly. It's just like you want a fresh start. It's afforded to you under the new roles. It's a new staff. Your guy is gone. It'll never be the same. And yeah, it's you'd like to, you know, hey, let me build it for and be that bridge for the next program. But with the existing transfer rules and with NIL, I mean, you're not going to see it anymore. And so it's really sad that I just, as far as college football is concerned, I think that they're going to have to take a real, real good look at where they want this to be. The article with the interview with, I think it was Capel and Tuitelli, was pretty awesome. I don't know if you had a chance to read that. I think you posted it.
No,
at one point.
I meant to, and I didn't. I did not read it though.
So Tuitelli, you know, he decided to retire. He's actually, I think, interviewing for a GA position right now. I hope he gets it. He had some really, really great quotes in there, just about passion and college football and what it means to be a Husky and why he stayed. And he actually talks about how he was when Lake was gone, he was going to probably leave. And he talked to the other guys in the room, Bands and, you know, Latuli and all them. And next thing you know, it's like he decided to stay and stick it out, and they got to where they got. And he battled injuries, and he was never able to really get his body right. But he said it saddens him that, you know, that with the NIL and the transfer portal, he's like, the way he mentioned it, like people are just going where the bag is, wherever the money is. And whenever you commit to the money, I think he said, whenever you commit to the money, there's no passion there. And that's so true. You commit to a coach, you commit to the money, you don't commit to a program, you don't commit to a culture, you're going to strip college football of the passion. You're going to strip the players of the passion. And so it's going to fold on itself. And all this coaching carousel, you know, the way that they waited till the transfer portal window closed on the Bama players before Grubb announced, that's going to come back to bite them. If they actively lied to some of those kids to get them in and stay in, after spring, you can believe they're going to enter into the transfer portal. And so that might really crush them too. I just think the whole system's broken, and I don't take it too seriously anymore. It's like until there's some actual change or regulation, it's just going to be a shit show that you're going to slowly fade out caring about.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I think of somebody, and this isn't, I liked Muhammad, so I'm not even really picking on him here, but I'm going to use him as one example. He's going to Oregon now. So in the span of 3 years, he's at Oklahoma State and he's at Washington, and then he'll conclude his college career at Oregon. And then I think back to somebody like, let's say, Dave Hoffman. And when he and I wrote the Husky Hitman together, and then just talking through the years, the way that he talks about when he gets together in these reunions with certain guys, James Clifford and Empo, Steve Entman and these other guys that he loved like brothers then, and they have that love that they're going to have for each other till they all pass away years from now, you know. And there's kind of that old true to your school type of thing, and the whole college experience, and they went through all the the tough practices and the ups and downs, and then winning the national championship in that particular case. And they have those experiences where they live that together, and through the with the backdrop of the University of Washington, or on the stage of the University of Washington, and that's their experience. And so when you compare Muhammad when he's 50 years old to Dave Hoffman right now, looking back on his career, something's lost there. And like you use the word mercenary, it's kind of like, it's, I don't even know if Muhammad would be even cognizant of what he's lost and what all these players are losing. But that's not to say that I think they shouldn't get paid or anything. I'm not saying that, but it's a complicated situation. But like you said, this whole college football setup, the way it is, it's, I remember who it was that told me this just a few weeks ago, but they were saying that the thing that they love about, it might have been Willie Duger, Joey, I'm not sure, but the thing that they love about college football compared to the NFL was that the college kids are unencumbered by a lot of the job portion of it, and it's just they love football, and they're out there having fun with kind of the, you know, youthful exuberance that everybody loves to tap into and live through viscerally and all this. And we're losing that, and I think we're going to lose it further going to this whole playoff setup, and you lose the whole the greatness of the bowl system. And a lot of people, younger people now, they don't even really understand what the bowl system was like, but it used to be a lot better. And I'll just say one more thing. I'm kind of rambling here, but I don't remember if you were saying this off mic or on, but the Huskies capped the season. Like you said, when the Huskies won the Sugar Bowl, basically that was nirvana for you, and it didn't matter what happened much after that in a certain sense. And it was one of the most important victories in Washington football history. And in the old days, it would have capped off with the Sugar Bowl championship, and that would have been that. You know what I'm saying? Even if we finished number two to Michigan in one of the polls or whatever. And then it kind of gets nullified a little bit, because like every day when I go looking for articles to post the links to Hardcore Husky, and I start Googling things, and I Google Washington Huskies, and the very first thing that I have to look at every single day, the first thing that pops up is that Michigan score, and it's like I have to like relive it every day, And immediately I see these Michigan running backs running 75 yards down the field for a touchdown. But go ahead. I've been rambling.
No, but, I mean, you make a good point. I mean, the other flip side of that is if it was under the old system, then we would have just lost the Rose Bowl to Michigan and never had the Sugar Bowl experience to begin with. But you're, I mean, the overall
touche,
still,
but yeah,
it's still
you're really getting technical there, but yeah, true enough.
I mean, in theory, yeah, then we all want to commit seppuku, and that's all it is. So,
and it's Jonestown, yeah.
Exactly. So,
of course, it's Jonestown over a reaction button for a website, but that's another thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, the amazeballs. Oh, that's the amazeball gate of 2024.
Amazeball gate.
I actually had an ex who went to SD who used to say amazeballs. This was like in 2009. So. Hardcore Husky is just 15 years behind your typical sorority girl over at SC.
Well, here's
we finally
the thing.
Got there.
I'll say this. The only time I've ever heard amazeballs or seen it anywhere in life was when the late Larry would say, he'd text me, and sometimes he'd be sarcastic about something, and he'd go, amazeballs. And I almost thought he even made it up or something. So. But then all these people are saying, oh, it's like some sorority chick thing to say or whatever. It's like, I don't know. I've never even heard of it before, you know. But
there's a whole other side to Larry we never knew. You know, to get back, the
yeah, we're going down a rabbit hole there.
The problem with
the amazeballs rabbit hole.
Right. The problem with the current system and like everything you just described is just a sign of the times. Like we can sit here and you know want those old days to come back, but the reality is especially with the kids, they won't really know what they're missing out on. Just like kids, you know, before the internet, after the internet, it's like the kids with cell phones in their hands 24/7. It's the best thing that's ever happened. That's all they know. They don't know what it's like to put it down and you know experience you know playing outside and all those things. It's just a different era. And so, you know, that era of, you know, Dave Hoffman carrying, you know, these memories with him for a lifetime with this brotherhood that he's built around the University of Washington as the backdrop, all that stuff is so important to him. Someone like Muhammad just like, oh, yeah, that was a great – I think he had that with his team in 23. I like Muhammad too. But it's just like if you're going to be a mercenary, I will give him this much. Being a CB, a DB, or particularly a cornerback, and trying to be a shutdown corner is probably the one position that is pretty plug and play. It's, you know, it's like I'm better than you. I'm man on man. If you're used that way, which I think he will be.
Yeah.
And so it's not like he's an O lineman who is now going to be with a bunch of dwarves or something, or he's a running back dependent on the OL or whatever. You know, wide receiver dependent on someone getting in the ball. I mean, he's pretty much going to be tasked with the same thing that he's proven he can do. It's unfortunate that, you know, he'd like to say, I wish he hadn't gone there, but, I think that's just what you're going to see. And it's so much more of just the transferring with the coaches. And I think the coaches are burnt out. I think their salaries will plummet at some point. I'm really curious to see with the 12 team playoff and the two super conferences, how that's going to go. It's turning into NFL light. They're going to kill the passion. They're going to kill the support. It's going to be regional once again, but strictly to the South and Midwest. I mean, it's not good long term. I think people are starting to realize that. That at some level, we want a little continuity. You know, I like following the career path of guys like Jarzynka who were walk ons who made it onto the field and became electric, or the guy that was a highly, you know, rated recruit and he didn't get on the field for a couple years and is he a bust? He's not. And then he shows out, you know, in his final season and makes a big impact. There's all kinds of different stories where you can follow someone's career for better or worse, which attached you to the program, which kind of made it feel special. And so that's going to be stripped and very, you know, you're not going to see it nearly as much. That's why I love Roma Dunze. It's just how he stuck through, especially some you know, higher level guys like that. He could have left, you know, to the NFL or to any other school multiple times. And you know, after Lake, after the first season. But it's just kind of, I think the big takeaway from this offseason is it's not sustainable. And I hope that some sort of safeguards are placed in so there can be just a little more consistency. Because it will feel empty. It'll feel empty when you say, okay, we want a championship maybe, and then the whole team turn. I don't have the energy. I don't know like half the players anymore. I used to know every single player to the 3 deep, the incoming recruiting class and the guys after them. And I have a good idea still, but it's just like, why invest the time? Because I don't even know if you're ever going to step on campus anymore. Odds are you won't.
I think that.
And so it's hard to attach. It's.
I was in traffic the other day and just thinking a little bit, and I was thinking, if you're Jackson, or what's the name of the guy that dropped the football before he crossed into the end zone, Tupatala, those are the mm-hmm. only two starters back. And how weird is it to think that you're the vanguard heading into 24, and then you're surrounded by 20 new guys? It's just
it's an opportunity.
It's an opportunity,
it's bizarre.
But like I said in a post a couple weeks ago, it's like I'm kind of viewing this 24 season as like the 1977 expansion Seattle Mariners, kind of like we're filling up this whole new roster and we don't know what we're going to get. But,
I mean, more or less, it was always going to be that way anyways. Like, you know, the main meat of the roster
not
was
to this degree.
The main meat. Yeah, but the main meat was still going to the NFL and moving on.
Yeah,
the OL,
main part.
Like, you know, losing, you know, Brailsford, Hatchett, like there's, you know, Kaleppo, like those three right there, you're like, okay, that's three OL starters that would be nice to have. So no doubt about that.
Jeremy DeBart, Jeremy Bernard still here, though, if DeBoer's still here, you know, our running back, Dylan Johnson, I'm guessing would still be here. You never know, Jalen Polk might have stayed another year.
I don't think so. I think that Polk and DJ are gone. I mean, especially DJ with his injuries and knowing as a running back, I think he's gone. But I do think that DeBoer completely went full throttle, redlined the engine for last season. He went for it. He got the reward out of it that he was looking for. He's now at Alabama. And
well,
if he does that at Alabama at some point, he'll go to the NFL.
I just want to say one thing. You said he went for it full bore and everything, but I do believe that he was distracted heading into that championship game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But he, at that point, it's irrelevant. It's like whether he wins or loses, the conversations are being had. He's in the room
for his career,
for his career, which is
not for UW's trophy case, but
yeah, for UW, that's, you know, that's just another reason to hate him, but. For him, it did what it needed to do, and he risked it all. And I don't think that infrastructure, those guys, everyone that he had talked to, even if he was back, yes, I think UW would still have maintained. I don't think DeBoer's just going to forget how to coach. I think he's really good, especially on game day.
And he rebuilt our culture.
He rebuilt the culture, but it was based on a lie. And so now that that's been found out, he's got to try it again. And we'll see how that works. Especially, I mean, his first big test is if they told those guys on offense that Grubb, and based off of Parker Brailsford's dad's tweet saying, like, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. But it's like, I get the sense that there was some, you know, disingenuous, hey, you know, Grubb's going to be here. I don't know if Huff is for sure going with Seattle or not. But if that's the case, that's really going to affect someone like him. So once spring portal opens, I'd be really interested to see what happens at Alabama. UCLA is going to be turnover. Michigan's going to be turnover. I don't know if there's any truth to the rumor, but the new Arizona coach might be interviewing for the UCLA open position that Chip just abandoned. And so all these things that are just moving around right now, I think that it's just going to really open up the portal players. It's tough with DeBoer. He can no longer be the Jolly Shucks guy from South Dakota, who has your best interest at heart. He's the stone cold killer who's trying to win and do what's best for him. And so you can't lean on that anymore. And that's fine, but that's what it is now. And that's a different pitch. And he's getting chewed up by the real snakes who are openly, I'm a snake and I've been a snake. And this is what you're going to get, like Lane Kiffin. Kirby Smart. I mean, these guys are going to absolutely shred him because they've been playing in this game openly for years.
Shred. I hope he gets shredded. He's been successful. He's not some, you know, guy that just came off the boat or whatever, so to speak. That's a terrible analogy, but, he's been successful everywhere he's been. You know, that's not an accident. So, by the way, I'm looking at RollBamaRoll.com. which is where I get all my information. And it says Scott Huff is headed to the Seahawks as well. So
okay.
I just find that so perplexing. But.
Yeah, so now the OL is you know, someone like Parker who's going to have some five-star center, five-star guard breathing down his neck with more prototypical size that the locals love, way more than him. Now he's in trouble, right? And so that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for him. I kind of like Fish's approach. I mean, Fish is more – I don't think he's – I don't really have a full read on him, but it's more like the Kiffin approach of like, hey, I'm here. I doubt Fish stays at UW as long as he's staying. Let's just get that up in the air. Like, I'm not gonna drink the Kool-Aid that Fish is a lifetime Husky. But I will say I like his approach where he's like, hey, it's NFL, NIL. We have the experience. We know what it looks like. We got legacy. We got the legacy kids, running the offense and defense. They're going to be walking around the building. It's not going to suck. And as always, to recite the Iron Laws is, we have the tradition, the location, the money, the infrastructure is in place, and we have the best president in all the land who supports the administration, supports the team. We're not going, and we're in the best conference, at least the 1B to the SEC's 1A in this new alignment. So I think that's – I actually feel, and this is not me just Dugan, maybe it is, I feel better with the current landscape of college football. If it was the old school, we'd like to have DeBoer. But with what's going on, having someone like Fish, I don't think that DeBoer had much in the tank for UW this season in particular. I don't think it would have been much better or worse. We'll find out. I think that Fish can come in and he can win 9 games, maybe 10 games. These seasons are so long. I think it can happen. We'll see after the spring. But I don't think the ship is on fire like everyone's making it out to be.
Because like I've been saying, woe is us in regards to the offensive line, and I still feel that way. But at the same time, like people were immediately dumping on over, they were shitting on Troy Dannon, right? And I jumped in real quick there on the boards to say, hey, let's at least give him a chance to see how he responds to this and who he hires before we just, just dismiss him as being a weak turd or something. And he's responded really well. And the thing that, going back 10, 15, 20 years ago, I used to all the time say, hey, why aren't, people with, the UW and the head coach and the administration aggressively going after the Microsofts and Amazons and people and trying to work, network those and get some money in to help. And this was before NIL even, but and to see Fish come in like his hair is on fire and immediately go talking about that and making those connections already and going 100 miles an hour. It's just like, yes, that's it. Tap into those resources and don't be shy about it. And it's beautiful. Yeah. And I heard that ESPN interview the other day, and it was just like, well, this guy's awesome,
Yeah, I mean, he's still trying to make a name for himself, and he's been climbing for a long, long time. He's done it in the NFL, and he's stuck around, and he's made connections. People like him. I think he's clearly, strategic and intelligent in how he goes about it. And he's more of a modern-day coach, knowing how to leverage the, social media, getting on platforms and saying what he needs to say to get people excited and let it be known, hey, this is what we stand for. And the messaging is always constant. It's constant NFL. It's constant NIL. It's constant support. The city of Seattle, what that offers you. I think he's not shy about it, which for if we're going to be in this Wild West era, you want someone like that at the helm. Probably more so than someone who's, kind of that quiet assassin type like DeBoer. And I don't know the inner workings of Alabama, but from what I've, seen, it sounds like, from an SEC perspective, they don't have their NIL game as strong as a lot of the other programs. It was really Saban-centric, which is the trade-off when you have the greatest coach of college football all time running the show, of course, with his track record of bringing guys to the NFL. Of course, that's an easy sell. Hey, you're going to sacrifice some upfront dollars in NIL. Yeah, you can go to Ole Miss or wherever and get paid a little bit more, but I'm going to teach you and get you, tens of millions of dollars for your career and set you up for life if you just do what I say. That's that's a pitch that works. And now that that's removed from Alabama, you know, I was a kid in the 90s. I remember Alabama, you know, in the late 90s. I mean, they were losing to Colorado and shit. You know, they suck. Like, they can go back down very simply. They're not built, completely impervious to just complete destruction of their own program. So an implosion is the word I'm looking for. So, I think that...
Googles. You best believe that they realize that they've lost the Saban factor and they need to bolster NIL. They're not just going to sit around picking lint out of their belly buttons. They're going to have people take the bull by the horns and get that funded and whatever they need to do. So now they have Courtney Morgan down there, and that could be a real Achilles heel, but in my opinion. But,
yeah. I don't know what Courtney Morgan does to this day, but that was already the carcass of Bama was already getting picked apart these last few years. And without Saban, I wouldn't be shocked if they fall. Again, I don't think that DeBoer is a bad coach. I just think that it's going to be hard times for him. And to kind of bring it full circle with Grubb leaving and now Huff, it sounds like that's just more responsibility on his plate that he wasn't accustomed to heading into this situation. So. Especially in the transition year. And if it's built off a lie, Huff was going to be there and Grubb was going to be there, good luck in the spring.
Yeah. So, and again, I'll say for a third and final time, I hope that he face plants, but I just don't see it. But, you know, we'll see. So, and Georgia went and got one or two of their big players, I know, right? Somebody else went to Texas. Some recruit left Alabama and went to Texas. So, they have mm-hmm. lost a little bit. I did find it a little surprising of how much DeBoer felt the need to raid the Husky pantry and to take back down there to Bama. I found that kind of odd, but
we had talent. There's talent there for sure. I think Jeremy Bernard's a talented kid.
Oh,
I think Parker Brailsford's a talented kid.
Alabama quality?
He didn't pick everyone. Well, who knows? I mean, that's that inferiority complex of us West Coasters. I mean,
maybe
you got to get on the field with them. I think we'll see. Even looking back at the 2016 team, it's like, do we even belong to be on that field with Bama? Well, if you look at them, the rosters on that day, we did. And so I think a lot of the edge the SEC has. Yes, they have. I'm not going full fire Bill here. And saying and pumping and saying the SEC is trash, but a lot of sports is sports psychology and the mental edge they have. Like, I'm playing Bama, I'm playing this guy. A lot of these guys are beat before they get on the field. So that was the best part about DeBoer's program, was we can go on the field, you know, whether it was the Alamo Bowl or Texas in the Sugar Bowl or Oregon. It was like with the higher ranked recruits, it was like, hey, we're better than you. And I think UW is going to have a huge amount of guys drafted off of this team.
No doubt.
And instilling that belief that we can have talent out here on the West Coast and we can send you to the league.
Of course.
I think the messaging will be good.
That Georgia and Alabama, both of their defensive lines looked like NFL defensive lines almost, you know. And that's a reality. So the idea of having a psychological edge because you have the crimson helmet or whatever, and the, you know, the, I think they got beautiful uniforms, Alabama, nice classical look. But you know, just because you put that on, you know, the mystique would fade quickly if they didn't have the athletes to back it up. So there is something to that. But let's shift gears a little bit, though. Let's look at UCLA now with Chip Kelly leaving, and this is what is so unfortunate about college football. And at the same time, it's an opportunity for the Huskies. That roster is now open for invasion, like Genghis Khan. So, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the UCLA in the Big Ten still just feels even weirder than SC in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's because SC has their ties with Notre Dame, which kind of makes them a little bit more of a Midwest name. But UCLA
and their
roster. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they held the flag for so long. Their roster's opening. I mean, for all we know, Fish is in negotiations right now with UCLA. I believe the way Fish to UCLA would not shock me at this point. Yeah. Well, everything I said about Seattle, but better one. Okay.
You know, it killed us to leave. We love being in LA now.
and this time Fafita comes with him, you know. So the whole system is brilliant. Yeah, I think that there are some West Coast ties. I mean, I was looking through the roster and you have there's some 5-star, 4-star guys who've just been sort of sitting there in the depth for a minute, probably looking for another chance. And so really, really curious to see who they hire. It's all timing too. The way the coaches, the dominoes fall. It's just always so interesting. If you know Bill O'Brien was going to be the OC, now he's at BC for their head coach. If he had held off for another half day, maybe he goes. Maybe he calls Chip Kelly. Maybe he's the UCLA head coach. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to break down. But I'm really curious to see who UCLA is going to hire as their head coach. And I think that pantry will be open, but everyone will have access to it. And what Washington can offer is we got playing time, we got spots available, and we have a high profile location. But hopefully UCLA completely drops the ball and hires that San Jose State guy away from Arizona. I think that would be nice.
Arizona.
The last thing we need is Saban to be like, you know, I've been golfing out here on the West Coast and I really like it. And I think I could play. I think I got a couple more seasons left in me. And yeah, Saban's at UCLA. You know, you got to be kidding me. I think that's just part of what these roster turnovers. It's unfortunate, UW. I like that Fish is pushing spring ball back as far as he can to hopefully, you know, with the quarter system, get some of these late spring portal transfers in and get them some reps. I will not make a announcement of what the record will be until I've seen spring ball. Because that roster is going to have, we're still going to add probably another 10, 15 guys. And hopefully they are from more established programs that actually have some college experience behind them. The OL is in trouble.
Hopefully they can play. Hopefully they can play offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big everyone's concerned about the OL. It is, I'm very concerned. I don't know. The only time I really saw Hatchett play, Landon was the ASU game where they just kept blitzing right up over him and crushed us there. So I'm concerned. Yeah, the OL is going to be a problem next year. But at least we have Will Rogers back there to, you know, get absolutely obliterated and not affect the development of our younger QBs. That'll work out.
Yeah, I was actually, not to dwell on this, but I was a little bit surprised maybe he had nowhere else to go in the Chris Farley sense, but I was surprised that he came out of the portal and came back here. So since he came here for DeBoer, but.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants a pro-style offense, it's going to be there for him. I mean, that's what Fish is preaching. He's saying, hey, we're doing what McVay did. We're doing, we basically have the Rams and offense from his time working with him. And it's so, shoot. I mean, where else can you go?
One year to go.
On the outside. 1 year to go, learn it, and show on tape.
It's not like he's got 3 years. Say it again.
Well, just he'll have an opportunity to show on tape that he can complete, you know, NFL route tree, and I think that makes sense for him. Where else are you going to go? But yeah, it does. Part of me is, you know, we're so beat down. It's like, why wouldn't he have left like everyone else? But again, I go back to the iron laws. There's a lot of good.
I think maybe it's nuanced, but I think you might be misunderstanding me. I'm talking specifically about the fact that when he made that announcement that he was staying, our offensive line is just basically almost non-existent. So it's like it takes time for those guys to develop and gel and learn how to work together and stuff. And if the man's getting sacked 4 times a game and, has battered and bruised ribs by early October and a concussion or something, that's what I'm talking about, you know.
Well, the NFL wants to see if you can handle pressure, so here you go. You know? my pitch to him would be, hey, you know, look at Penix. Whenever he's thrown off the spot and guys get in his head, he's erratic, and he can't hit Adunze in the national championship game, even though he had the same exact looks in the Sugar Bowl, because he's thinking about the pressure instead of just, you know, focusing or whatever happened to him. And so, yeah, you just tell Will Rogers, look, we don't want you to set you up for failure like that, so we're going to give you some hot tests early and often, and we'll give you some tools to be successful, and NFL will see that you can handle the rush that you're going to experience.
Of course, Penix was always in shotgun, though, and then Fish said that in that interview he did they work primarily out of over, you know, under center. So I hope he got some quick release.
I hope that our running game is going to be, you know, we have some exciting, the new running back from Arizona. Yeah. I'm blanking on his name, but some really exiting guys there.
Jonah Coleman, I think right?
Coleman. Yeah, I think we can really lean on that. I mean, it's just college football. the reality is, every other team going through all this kind of turnover, there's going to be – it's easy to just say, hey, like a Muhammad on the outside is a plus for Oregon, which I do think with like CBs, that's one thing. But when you're turning over big portions of your roster, you don't have anything – that's linking these players together outside of the NIL money or whatever it may be.
And the
building culture and all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, it's not going to be easy for everyone else. I think the product in general is going to suffer.
Great point.
From a perspective that, you know, just that's why UW was, we were awesome. We were gelling, we were one team, and we're doing the whole thing. But now every single year, it's like you're starting with a little rookie mini camp. I mean, the NFL takes them a minute to get together. Everyone in college football is going to take much longer. And so I think that there's going to be a drop-off in the product a little bit. You're not going to see these well-oiled machines like we're used to. Maybe some guys will get it. I mean, so I don't worry so much. Like Washington's not the only team trying to figure out how to put it all together right now. Everyone. And after spring, we're going to see it even more. Especially with the new rules, the guys are like, hey, I think I should be the top guy here, but I'm number two for some reason. Well, I'm gone. We're going to see it all over the place. And then it just comes down to injuries in season and who has that to survive. So I think that Washington, to your point, Dannon did as good of a hire as he possibly could, considering the circumstance.
Yeah.
And
is that something, though? I'll make my point after you're done. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just think that with Fish in control and with his messaging and his vision, I think he's probably – I give Fish like 3 years where he's, you know, he's either probably moving on to the NFL after three or he's fired after three because it's going to – I feel like that's right around the spot where we're with this current, like, this doesn't have to be like everyone's like, oh, we're going to be set back for a decade. It's not like that anymore. It's make yourself competitive and find a way to build a culture around new pieces every single season. And if you can do that successfully, which is something that he's accustomed to being from the NFL, where the roster turnover is a lot higher than what you typically see in the college level, it's new for a lot of these coaches. I think that we're going to find ourselves in a good spot.
Well, then that's exactly why we could not take the risk on Ryan Grubb, even though, like, you and I both like him a lot and felt that he was sincere in his feelings toward Washington and all that. But just because if he was the wrong choice, that would set us back as much as a decade or 6 years or something like that, especially with the limited
amount. We love dramatics. We love dramatics with the Husky Nation.
Well, I really believe that, though, because you lose all these people. And let's say that he was like deer in the headlights right now at this moment instead of what Fish is doing. Mm-hmm. And then what? You can't fire him. Oh, you know, grow fired after 89 days or whatever. You can't do that. So.
Yeah, I get the sense he doesn't like to recruit that much either, where it's just like he probably went to Alabama and was just like, Jesus. This is like 20. I would hate it. You know, like recruiting 24/7 your own guys, the other guys, and rosters. And it's if you're just a football X's and O's geek, the current setup of the game is awful. And so, yeah, I think that
when I first heard Chip Kelly went to Ohio State, my first thought was that I bet you Ryan Day told him he would have to do limited recruiting. He just focus on plays.
He was already like 1 foot out. Yeah, he was 1 foot out at UCLA. Chip doesn't like recruiting, but he still landed the top quarterback last year in Dante Moore, who's already left. But that's what UCLA will do for you. But you're totally right. Like, there's a perfect example. He's burnt out, doesn't want to recruit, doesn't want to maintain a roster. The management required for that is just nonstop. So it's like, hey, let me be in X's and O's. Ohio State, they're all in. Michigan, it'd be like if Washington State won the national title, like, how would we respond? Like, Michigan winning the title and taking all that shine and all everything that's gone on over there, they have bought, I don't know if you've been following Ohio State, but they are throwing around major money. If Chip Kelly comes back and now he's just focusing on football and doing whatever, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think he's not the same Chip that we saw in Oregon. The game is caught up. But I think it'll
Chip
be interesting.
Chip Kelly will be a chubby Norm Chow. He's just going to close out his career calling plays.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah. It's, if Ohio State doesn't win the title next year, Day is gone. I think he'll be the first coach fired after, like, he only has, like, four losses in his career. And he's, like, four losses over 5 years, and he's fired. I mean, Ohio State has lost. They have zero walking on the beach for perspective out there. They need to win the title now that Michigan has just hit them with one.
I hate to sound like the old guy here, but are you old enough to remember John Cooper at Ohio State?
I am. I got to meet him in the trophy room during the 95 game when Bobby Hoeing thought my dad was a former player, and my grandpa went to Ohio State, so we went to that game, and we were outside of their athletic club. And Bobby Hoeing, the quarterback at the time, was on a payphone. My dad and I just stood there like, you know, sad puppy dogs, and he just kind of looked at us strange and opened the door because, you know, it was locked. We didn't have access. And next thing you know, I'm walking through the halls looking at the Heisman trophies. Terry Glenn, Eddie George walk past me, and then John Cooper comes out of his office, looks at my dad and I, kind of takes a double look, and then walks on. anyways, that was a fun little memory. We lost that game. That's when I realized I was screamed at by a lot of Ohioans that day. I was like 9 years old or something, and they were coming after me. But yeah, John Cooper.
He won a lot of games, but he could beat Michigan, and that did him in. So.
Yeah, he's hopefully that might be Ryan Day, especially now that Harbaugh figures it out. What about Urban Meyer? Do you think Urban Meyer comes back to college?
I would think he might try. You got to think he's bored in life and would want to have one more shot at something, you know.
Fielding offers.
You know, and I think he probably loves the attention and the speculation and his name bounding about. And I'm sure if he does a daily Google search and then he'll occasionally get a hardcore Husky post come up on his computer screen where somebody say, just make Urban say no and all this. So, but there was a point I was going to make about 10 minutes ago, though, just as an aside, in how football has changed so much. Think about this, though, Dougals. Troy Dannon has a 45-minute conversation with Jed Fish on a Saturday afternoon and then calls him back Saturday night and offers him the job. Then there's no flying back and forth and clandestine meetings and everything. They just a 45-minute phone call, and then a few hours later calls him back, offers him the job to be the next head coach at the University of Washington, and he accepts. That's just like,
yeah,
wow, you know.
It's a different time. But the money that's at stake, like that decision, I mean, a lot of these decisions, a lot of these coaching hires are still luck, right? You think you have a home run and they,
sure,
they completely
sure.
fall. You know, if you thought,
hey,
you know,
I wanted Matt
Chip
Campbell.
Kelly at UCLA. You did. Matt Campbell
that's
is
true.
Sitting, you know, Matt Campbell is just like at the end of Dodgeball when Globo Jim Ben Stiller is eating fried chicken. And he's all fat. He's like fucking Chuck Norris. That's Matt Campbell right now, just fucking Caleb DeBoer, just wishing he had said yes to that offer.
Preparing for another 5-7 season.
Yeah, he'd be set up with like $10 million a year now. Instead, he's just kind of like, whatever he's doing at Iowa State. Yeah, you can't really feel too bad for him or any coach right now.
No. So maybe we'll go a few more minutes here. Any other things we want to touch upon? I'll go look over at the boards here and see if there's anything percolating.
No, I think it's fun to kind of get back on and this season. I hope that we can all look back at the 23 season. And another thing that Tuitelli in that interview, he said that he really felt that the guys didn't have a chance to kind of enjoy the season, right? Like get back together and have that moment, and just kind of fell apart for him. So I hope those guys do have a shot to come back, and the team is remembered fondly. It just right now it's been really hazy and a lot of great memories, and I remember when we had the last time we talked, it was like mid-season, and I was having heart palpitations, and I hadn't enjoyed any of the wins, and we were like 7-0 or 8-0. It was during that hard stretch where Penix was playing kind of like how he played in the national title game, and it was just kind of like, gosh. So this team has had such a weird kind of storyline that now that the dust is settling, we can all look back and be like, that was really, really special. And the Sugar Bowl is just a top experience for me as a Husky fan, going there with my dad, being able to take that in. It was a wonderful – I love that venue. I'd never been there before. And I was in nosebleeds, and it still was awesome. I was, center on the upper deck, and you could still see. And it was just – it was a big game environment. And that's a memory I'll have with my dad. So I'm always going to be grateful for this last season, and hopefully with the new playoff we get there again. I don't know about next season, but with Fish, I would be shocked if we're not in the new structured playoff within a couple of years.
I could go with maybe 2-3 years from now, maybe 2 years, but 3 years I would hope so. I would hope we would have some structure and momentum at that point. This next season could be, we could be looking at 4-8 for all we know. So I know nobody wants to hear that, but anyways, we'll see. So again, I'm looking at us as like an expansion baseball team, and we're filling in the roster, and we got a new coach. And but the fact that
Ohio
he's like
State.
Reaching out to Steve Ballmer, I mean, he's going for it,
Yeah, and that's exactly what you mean. And I think the Big Ten isn't as competitive as everyone makes it out to be, like this big, bad Big Ten.
No,
like, I always would have been winning 10 games a year without any kind of offense, like for decades. So,
and a very boring
really
team to watch.
Yeah, it's Ohio State and Oregon next year. I'm not too impressed with whatever's going on with Michigan, with the rebuild of the roster. Whatever's going on with Penn State, their quarterback looked terrible. I think they played Ole Miss, but just looked awful in their bowl game. And I just feel like Wisconsin's having everyone's just in disarray. It's not like this is going to be such murderer's row that we can't exist. USC starting over, UCLA just got gutted. So I look at the schedule. I don't even think we play Ohio State next year, unless I'm completely off. I mean, we miss Ohio State. We have Oregon, we have Michigan, and we have Penn State, and we have Iowa. I don't know. You even if you drop all of those, you're still going to win the rest. But I think we're competitive. I think that there's still enough talent around, just depending on Fish putting together and building momentum off of spring. So I'm not as intimidated by this idea of Big Ten football being so much greater
than what
we've experienced.
I'm more worried about our offensive line. That's 85. It's like 85% of my focus is what are we going to do about the offensive line? So
we get a five-star running back in, and it's like, but can he play left guard? It's like,
that's true.
Well, hey man, great to talk as always, and we'll talk again soon, and I'll get this puppy edited and published here.
All right, I appreciate you for having me on. Go Dogs.
You bet. Go Dogs. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Sway's Wigwam, yeah.
Sway's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's Gift to College Football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information, all for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. I have to redo that one, but...